Hi guys, welcome back. This is a Name Redacted podcast post show that we like to do. Here with me, Alex had to go to work because he works third shift. But here again, I'm Colin Norris.
Chris Nielsen.
Joe Shaman.
Alex Fulmer.
Damn it!
Ian Freeb.
Jeff, it always sounds like you say Joe when you say your name.
Sorry, Jeff.
Enunciate.
Jeff.
Something we wanted to talk about that we didn't get a chance to just because of general... It was more of just a greatest hits rundown of why we love comics and everything like that. There's a little bit of controversy going on in the North Carolina comic book scene. Comic book retailer scene. Involving one of our local stores, Acme, and another store, Ultimate. And from what I can understand, it kind of stems outside of convention dates.
Yeah.
Is that basically what it was?
Yeah, Ultimate Comics has their NC Comic Con last weekend, I guess.
Yeah.
And then whenever Acme was putting together Comic Book City Con, they just happened to be 2 weeks before NC Comic Con.
But they wanted to do that to coincide with the anniversary.
Right, right. It had a lot to do with the anniversary and just scheduling around all the cons in general, like... There was New York Comic Con, there was something else. There's a lot of other stuff going on around that time, the whole year, basically, and that was the weekend that they felt appropriate for the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And then NC Comic Con, or Ultimate Comics, felt that was like a low blow to them, like the first shots of a war or whatever. So, they had commissioned Chris Giarusso, who designed our Acme Bat, who also designed Ultimate Comics mascot, Ultimite. So, he's like a mutual friend of both stores. They had commissioned him to do a drawing of Ultimite ripping Acme Bat's head off. Which...
Okay, a little jab.
All
right.
Yeah, it's a little jab, and they said it's all in good fun, which I understand where they're coming from. However, we had built the Acme Bat to be more than just a mascot. It has become the Mickey Mouse of Greensboro, essentially. Like,
yeah.
It's bigger than a mascot. And
no, people go to Free Comic Book Day and get drawings done of Acme Bat.
Of Acme Bat,
yeah.
Like, who does that? Like, just a bat, like a mascot of a store. But, so they did that. They the guys at Acme had known about it for a few months. I guess Chris told him about it. I don't know why Chris did it. I don't know his side of the story. And I don't want to speculate on any of that. But
I would operate on the assumption that he's a work-by-commission kind of guy, so if he gets paid, he's going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And, maybe at the time he thought it, good fun or whatever. It'd be different if they were fighting, but, like, decapitation of essentially Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Like, all these kids... that come to the store, look up to this character that we've created. Like, I don't know, it's a big thing.
I think it was more the coloring book page that really kind of got my attention.
No, that's
the
one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I saw that, we're gonna give this. You're gonna give that to kids.
Oh yeah, because they masked it. It wasn't just that it was a drawing; it was a mass produced thing to give to kids so they can color.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That's
like.
Yeah. So. They released that like a couple days, like maybe a week before Comic Book City Con, and they also made a lot of the guests sign non-compete disclosures saying that if you come to NC Comic Con, or excuse me, if you come to Comic Book City Con, you can't come to NC Comic Con, which that was drawing the line, like pissed off the people that you don't want to piss off. They told heroes that they can't come to NC Comic Con, and like... You don't want to piss off heroes. That's like...
That's Big Daddy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why would you do that?
But I always operate an assumption, and we've talked about this in this culture, high tides raise all ships.
Yeah.
You know, so why... Like, I don't understand that...
Their logic, or their defense, was saying that they don't want a lot of the same guests going to Comic City Con and then also going to NC Comic Con because they want their customers to experience different conventions. I call bullshit on that. Because I've seen the same people 50 different times. Like, we get Jacob Shabbat, Chris Giarusso, Greg Shiegel, and Smitty. Those four people, including Kelly and Jeremy Dale, like, we get the same 7 or 8 people every year at Free Comic Book Day.
And it's always a blast to see
them. And it's always good to see them. Yeah, I would definitely go see them twice in a row. Like,
my thing is like, sweet, I get to see my favorite artist twice in 1 year?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Fucking awesome.
How is that a problem? And, yeah, that was their defense. They didn't want their customers to pay to see the same show. Really, they're just bitter little children trying to start a war. They had sent people to our convention as, like, you know, little warriors to go around and spread, you know, spread shit about us. I don't know exactly
because they could have just as easily come there and just, like, hey, you know there's another con coming up in 2 weeks? You should come check it out.
Get a flyer.
Like,
come check it out. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you didn't get a sketch by Kelly Yates this time, come on down to NC Comic Con and get one there.
They could have had a booth at our convention advertising their own convention. We even advertised their convention in our weekly email. Like, we were sending business their way. We did not want to throw any punches at all. Like, if they came to our convention, we were going to let them in. We weren't going to, you know, we weren't going to have this war at all. So it was a one-sided war on their part. And then they go put a news article out. I don't remember if it was a Durham paper or if it was our paper.
I think
paper.
You linked it on Facebook.
I did. I just don't remember what it was.
I read it.
It was basically them, just being bitter babies about it. Like,
definitely, I would say, hope, and if I know the people that run Acme well enough, they'll stay above it all. I mean,
yeah,
let it be a one-sided war, you know?
Yeah, and it would be one thing if it was a recurring convention that's going to happen every year. It's not that yet. For what it was just a 30th anniversary party. We don't know if it's going to happen again next year.
Yeah.
It was just a one-time thing that happened on that one weekend. And Ultimate Comics could have been like, okay, yeah, they're throwing a birthday party, big whoop. Like, that's all it was, that's all it should have been, and then they made it a big deal.
Well, I was actually going to go, never mind, no, we're not going to get into it. I feel weird because I'm not drinking.
I thought the same thing when we were doing the first part. I was like, I want some of those delicious beers that I keep hearing about.
Well, it's just like
I want a pumpkin beer.
When we
Shit, I'm sorry. I totally fucked up. I should have brought you
one. Usually when we record, you know, it's a Sunday night. I always have Mondays off. Chris will have a couple beers with us.
Yeah.
Alex wasn't working regularly at the time, and I would just crash here. Like, it was whatever. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm hammered. I'm going to go lay down.
Yeah.
Now I can't stay here at night anymore because I can't be like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Fulmer, D'Agostino, I'm going to sleep on your couch while your son's at work. Because that'd just be awkward.
Right.
We'll get you some pumpkin beer if you want it, man.
Yeah, next time you're here on the show
or
something, I'll bring you some. I'll bring you, you know, a sampler or something.
Okay.
How's our neighbor Dr. Beer coming along?
It's still fermenting.
How many more weeks?
2 more.
I want it done now.
I'm letting it sit for 3 weeks, and then we'll bottle condition for about 3 or 4 months. I'm sorry. You want a good beer. That's what it takes.
I know, but
sorry.
That's why I don't brew, because I'd be like, I don't care.
Is there a label design for it?
It's going to be our...
supposed to be.
It's going to be the
Alamar I designed. It's going to be like that, but the words are going to be a little bit different.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But,
We have our own beer. We could have gone anywhere with merch, but we went with beer.
It's the best choice.
We limited our market to 21 and up.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't know, probably.
Is there anything comics related that we didn't mention earlier? I feel like there's so much stuff that I
can talk about.
But now that I'm on the spot, I can't think of anything.
Well, okay, so here you go. Here's something a lot of times we do in the post show. Like, if we have somebody come on we had a music guest one time, and we're like, oh, well, what are you nerd about? And then we had a whole fucking extra Star Wars episode. So outside of comics, like, do you have a thing that's just like,
my main two things are comics and board games and music. So my main three things, comics, board games, and music.
Let's talk about board games then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're big into Agricola.
Agricola is such an addiction for me. It's my favorite board game of all time.
Like, you go to competitions.
Yeah, I go to, in fact, this weekend, I was supposed to be in Maryland for EuroQuest. My friend Steve, the winner, I just got a message today. He had won the Siegelman Trophy, which is like the Heisman of board games.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I got a picture of it. Let me bring it up. But yeah, I was supposed to go to EuroQuest and participate in a lot of those tournaments. I couldn't afford it. I started a new job recently, so I couldn't afford to take the time off. But more importantly, the first week of August, my birthday is August 10th, so this is my birthday present to myself. The first week of August, every year, I go up to Lancaster, Pennsylvania for the World Pro Gaming Championship.
That's crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah
we're both in Pennsylvania.
I grew up just outside of Lancaster.
Yeah, it's at the Lancaster Host. It is a huge, like, I keep forgetting to get the number of people that show up. Like, thousands of people show up. There are numerous board game competitions. There's also, like, a war game competition, too, which has started out as a war game convention, but I'm not big into war games. And then there's the Euro game side of it, which is what I like to play.
So worker placement.
Yeah, worker placement, like Ticket to Ride, Agricola, Stone Age.
Love Ticket to Ride.
Thurn and Taxis, which is similar to Ticket to Ride. All those different...
So you play like some like resource management kind of games?
Yeah, resource management is probably my favorite type of game.
We played a game of Navigator.
Navigator. That is a competition that they have there too. And like I'm the only person locally that plays that game a lot. Everybody else, like, I don't know what it is about it. They just not as into it as I am.
Game.
I got all the way to the semifinals this past year in that game. And I lost by like 1 point. I'm so aggravated.
We were playing, the first time I ever played it, we had a group of people that we had one friend who had just a crap ton of board games. And so we were basically playing a new game every week.
Yeah.
And we played it one night, and we were five turns out, something like that, from the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd laid low the whole time, and I had like all my investments in the stock market.
Yeah.
And then I just like did the math. I was like, I won. Like, we're five turns out, and then, like, if provided nobody just like, throws a complete curveball, but that's what I love about those kinds of games.
It's really interesting because of that market. Like, you can be thrown off. I think that might have been what lost me the semifinal. Is all right. So
yeah, because somebody can fuck you on accident.
Someone can fuck you on accident, which is how I've lost in 90% of my games at the Board Gaming Championship. Because not only like.
Go ahead and explain it real quick, because I want to talk more about this, but I want people to know what we're talking about.
Too. Oh, yeah. Well, real quick, not only do experienced board gamers go to this convention, but, like, new people go to the convention. So you'll go to a table, and there'll be, like, you, a good person, and then, like, two of the newbies. And the newbies, 9 times out of 10, are the ones that are going to screw you, because they'll just take a move that's not good for them.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all, but it completely fucks you.
Yeah.
And this can happen in Navigator. So Navigator is a board game about... You're sailing the seas, delivering, well, not really delivering goods. It's like 1692.
Oh, I remember this game. Okay,
go. One of the main mechanics is it's a rondelle system. There are actions on this rondelle, and you can go up to 3 spaces on the rondelle. So you can go to the market to sell goods, and then you can ship them, or you can jump really far ahead and do some other stuff, but it costs you.
Yeah, so it turns into a balancing act of, like, am I going to sit here and turtle up, or am I going to try to, like, sprint to the end before it... And so, because when you get to the end, it ends the game, right?
That's there's 2 ways to end the game. There are buildings that you can buy. Once all the buildings are bought, game is ending. Game is over. And then if you get all the way to Nagasaki or Macau... No, it's Nagasaki. If you get all the way to Nagasaki by shipping, then the game is over then, too.
So it's either... The two basic strategies are you either do like the Zerg Rush strategy of I'm just going to get to the end before anybody does so that we can just end the game while I'm on top.
Right.
And the other strategy is to turtle up and try to acquire as much as you can to build these towers and...
Yeah, but a lot of that relies on the market, which is a really interesting mechanic in a game. I've never seen this mechanic in other games.
I haven't seen it anywhere else either.
So like, there's 3 types of goods. There's sugar, gold, and spice. And... You can either produce them for a certain type of money, or you can sell them for a certain amount of money. And when you sell, it goes one direction on the tracks,
which makes
the other option more valuable. Yeah. So if you produce, you go down, which makes it more valuable to sell later. And if you sell, it's supply and demand.
It's a supply and demand chart. So if you're making a whole bunch, you flood the market. And then the price of it goes down.
Yeah.
But if somebody is... But then that's good for somebody who's buying it and then using it to make other things because they get stuff for cheap.
So you have to work with the other players, really. Like, so the seating order, it goes clockwise. So ideally, if you're good, one player is going to get sugar, the other person is going to get gold, and then the other person is going to be able to sell the sugar that that person made, and then the next person is going to be able to sell the gold that the other...
And so you have to set it up in a way where everyone benefits from it, but everybody always has the leverage to throw the market
and
at the same
time. And if
one
person doesn't do that, it throws that whole dynamic off.
Right.
I'll have to play this.
And so that's the thing. Because the logic is, you want to set the market up in a way that you're the person who has the most leverage to throw it when it's the right time. But it's so easy to get fucked on accident, because if somebody makes a bad move...
Yeah,
as soon as
the person right to your right goes to market and just throws the whole market
off...
Then
so what your commodities are fucked, and you have to either... fix the market, or you have to start trading commodities that you're not prepared to.
Yeah. The game is really good.
I'll have to check it out. We'll have to play it sometime.
It's really cool.
It's hard for me. My instinct is, like, when people are talking about games, it's hard not to be, like, the board game snob. Be like, oh, the game is terrible. I'm referring specifically to Munchkin. Every time somebody... brings up
some of the we love Munchkin.
I like Munchkin.
Right. My instinct is the Badger, but then I have to realize that, you know, not everyone enjoys the same games that I do.
Yeah.
Just like there's, same with comics. Like I don't like a particular comic, but I can't make fun of somebody else for like I hate Deadpool, but I get why people like that.
Yeah.
If you like Munchkin, games should be about the enjoyment that you get from
it. When it comes to Munchkin, there's two reasons I like it. It's not objectively, it's not a good game.
Right.
It's a good game to bring in people who are what I call board game players into the tabletop world. This is a more complex game that you can still handle. Also, it is so much fun to yell at your friends when you're shit-faced.
Yeah.
And
the problem with Munchkin to me is, A, the cards are funny like once you've read them, and then after that they get old, which I guess is why they keep releasing new versions of Munchkin.
Right.
And B, like if all of you are trying to win, nobody wins. Like in order for one person to win, somebody just has to be like, I'm tired of playing this game, I'm just going to let you win.
Which is why they have like the team-up rules and stuff.
Yeah,
Jeff's neighbors actually...
We can pick up and play games.
Yeah. We were playing Munchkin, and we were just like, you know, gotten these... Because once you get good at the game and you're playing with people who are good at it, you get these crazy fucking, like, there's 80 monsters on the table that I'm fighting, and, like, I'm going to help you, because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
And, like, we were like, just fucking kill him, and just yelling this at the top of our lungs. And they got a noise complaint that we were yelling disturbing things late at night.
Yeah, I got a note on my door that, like, next week. It was great. And we were, like, in the hallway saying very disturbing things.
Yes.
We didn't even go outside.
What's that other resource management game that we played, Jeff, where you build a castle?
Oh. There were so many we played.
What did you say?
Is it Castle Panic?
No.
Belfort?
No.
I don't remember. It's a lot like Navigator. Navigator.
We need David Chrisley to come on here.
Is it?
Even though he's in
Carcassonne?
Seattle.
No, Carcassonne's not really a resource management.
Okay. But it's like a resource management game like that, but it's real similar, and you have to build a castle in the end.
Is that the one with the little people, the little wooden things, and then you're building like
castle
bridges, and you're...
Too.
You have the little square things, and you're putting them together in the wall?
Yeah.
Wait,
I don't remember the name. You have, it's a giant map, and then you get little squares.
It's not a map, it's a board. Like, it's an actual board.
And then
it's not, like, representative. No, it's the same game.
Okay.
It's not representative of anything. It's just a board you move through. Like, it's not like...
Pillars of the Earth?
No.
Because you build a castle in that, too.
I wish I could remember it. But anyway.
But each one is, like, either a wall or, like, a part of a city. Mm-hmm. And you're just trying to control the most, I guess. I don't remember.
Yeah. What? Moral of the story is, I'd love to play a resource game with you, because I generally kind of
dominate. If I could teach more people Agricola, which is like the resource management game, that would be awesome.
I'll play Agricola.
That game.
I'll play Agricola.
What is that?
So Agricola, it's a game about farming, and it doesn't sound fun, but the choices that you have to make in that game is what's addictive, because like you have to collect your resources, so you have
it
to collect.
What I'm thinking of.
You have to collect like wood and clay to build a room, because you have to build a room to grow your family. And then you plow fields, you build fences, collect sheep and boar and cattle, and then at the end of it's 14 rounds. And at the end of the 14 rounds, you check to see, you know, how many points everybody got. You see who has the better farm, and it's just what makes it addictive. Aside from the resource management itself, is the cards. You draft occupations and improvements, and there's so much diversity in those cards. Every game is different.
That could be fun.
You might have not been there that night.
I would love to play that. Because it's like StarCraft. Like, in my head, I'm really good at StarCraft, but what throws me off is the real-time part.
Yeah.
And so it's like when I have time to think about what I'm doing to manage, to leverage things.
Me and my brother used to play StarCraft a shit ton as a kid. So my brother once he found out that there's a StarCraft board game.
Oh my god, I have it, dude.
He went out and bought it. We have yet to play a game of it. We set it up.
Oh, really?
We've walked through the steps. We've kind of taken like two turns, and 4 hours later, we're like, we don't want to play this anymore.
Okay, that just got me excited because I have it, and mm-hmm. I lost the cards. I hate this so bad about board games. The packaging is terrible. The box just disintegrated in my car.
Yeah.
And the cards went everywhere. Fortunately, the plastic cards. So I'm in the process of reconstructing the board game to play because it's a fucking expensive game.
I would love to actually try to play through a whole game of that if I have like a weekend.
Yeah.
Because the turns
we did get through, it
feels, it's super long. Most fantasy flight games are really long. But it feels like StarCraft. Everything you do in there, it's got that feel.
And what's cool, what I love about it,
even the Zerg, like you could totally Zerg rush in that game.
What feels the most like StarCraft to me is when you play StarCraft, there are so many win scenarios.
Yeah.
So many win scenarios, and they've captured them all. And so it's like you can win by getting the most points, and so you can just like build up your team. You can completely decimate everybody else.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of win scenarios that built into the board game.
That's another thing that I like about most Euro games is the multiple paths to victory. Like in Monopoly and like Risk and Life and stuff, like you have a single goal. Like Monopoly, just have the most money.
Right.
In most Euro games, you can either, you know, have the most money or have this. Like there's multiple ways to get to where you're going, so you're not playing the same game every
and
time.
It keeps you on your toes because you got to make sure somebody else isn't being sneaky and acting like they're moving toward one goal, and then it's like, oh, checkmate. You're like, what?
Yeah. But Navigador is one of my favorites, and I only play it once a year, and that's when I go to Lancaster.
Oh, I would love to get a game of that together.
I could look for it on BoardGameGeek and see if I could find a cheap box.
We have it at the shop. I can always just borrow it.
Oh, there you go.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
What else did we play, Jeff? That was good.
There was that. I really like that.
I've never played a full
Space
game of
Nightfall. Or something? Not
I
Space Invaders,
that.
But it was the one with little UFOs. I can't remember the name of it. That game was a lot of fun.
I want to play Galaxy Trucker.
What is Galaxy Trucker?
Galaxy Trucker is what Shadow describes it as, real time multiplayer Tetris. So you're putting a ship together and then you're sending off this into space to see if it comes back whole. So you have all these tiles and you've got a timer and you're just grabbing tiles from the board and like putting them on your ship. And you have like lasers, you have like shields, you have passengers, there's aliens you can put on there, engines, batteries. And then once the timer's out, you just see what your ship is and then you send it out into space and see if it comes back. So there are cards that will come out and say, you know, you've got asteroids coming at your ship on this row. You either get hit or it gets deflected. You have pirates coming aboard. Do you have the proper defenses to defend against these pirates?
It just sounds like fun.
I like games where I really like games. They frustrate a lot of people, but where the whole game is played before the game even starts.
Cosmic Encounter is the name of it.
Cosmic Encounter, I have yet to play. Cosmic Encounter... was what, not Gary Gygax, who created Magic? Garfield.
Yeah.
Something Garfield.
I want to say James, but that was a present.
No. Anyway, the guy that created Magic, Cosmic Encounter, is the game that inspired him to create Magic.
Oh,
cool. Yeah, it's a great game.
And I have yet to play it.
That makes sense, because it plays a lot. I can see that.
That game's a very fucky game, especially towards you.
It's a lot of people's favorite game. I just haven't played it yet. I guess because it's dated and I've just played other games since then.
But yeah, I really like games where the setup is a large portion of the game.
Yeah,
where it's just like...
And then you set everything up.
Which is ironic because most people hate that part. Like, I'm weary about teaching on Fridays when we do board game.
Yeah, it has to be the right person to play that game.
Yeah, I'm worried about teaching people certain games because I feel like the setup is so long that they're going to be bored before we even start to play that game.
Yeah.
I really appreciate, like with Agricola especially, I really appreciate people that have the patience to get through that and to actually learn the game and not get bored halfway through it.
Well, I think that's part of the reason I like games like that is because setting up intense games can take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've...
It's so rewarding, though.
Yes. And if you have a game where... setting up the game is part of playing the game,
mm-hmm.
that's really cool. And StarCraft's kind of like that, too, where your placement of planets and stuff really affects the outcome of the game.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so it's just like, anytime you have a game where it's like, hey, here's the pieces of the board, and put those in a strategic place, it cuts back on that, like, well, I'm going to set this game up for an hour, and right, then we're going to play. And it's so cool because you have to just predict everything and just let it play. Even Risk. Like, that's one of my favorite parts of Risk. In my opinion, when you set up Risk, the whole game is almost decided in the first, like, 10 minutes.
Have you ever played Risk Legacy?
I have not.
Okay, so Risk Legacy is the only version of Risk that anybody should own. It is... So basically, they've taken a 3 to 4 hour unnecessarily long game and condensed it down into 15 mini games.
Yeah.
So you have a board. It's your typical Risk board. And you start to play a game, and there are goals to achieve. So instead of winning by, you know, global domination...
And I noticed they've started to bring that into to the actual Risk.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, actually, you're right. You're totally right. What was I saying? So, yeah, instead of, like, trying to do global domination, you get points. I think if you get 4 points, you've won that game.
Right.
And you sign the board, and then you add a sticker to the board that permanently changes that board. So there could be a nuclear fallout in Australia. Like, Australia is, like, normally the best place to start because it's so secluded.
Right.
Well, if you put a nuclear fallout in Australia, you have now have, like, -1 troops there for the rest of that game.
Oh, wow.
Like, the whole
See,
game
I like
changes
that.
As you play.
I like that a lot. We should play the shit out
there
of
There are secret envelopes that you can't open until you unlock certain things. Like, there's a thing that says you if you win 3 times in a row or something, open this pack. That's more cards, more races. Like, oh, there's races that you get to play, and the boards for the races have spots to put stickers on them. The rule book has spots to put stickers in it because the rules just keep changing the more you play. The more you unlock those packs... It's great. We still haven't. I think we've done 5 out of the 15 things that we can do.
Oh, so wait, it permanently changes the game.
Permanently changes
forward.
The game. So anytime
so not
you
just
play
that
in the
session,
future, yeah, not just a session. In the future, when you play that game, you know Australia is completely going to be fucked. You also get the name.
Oh, wow.
You also get the name the continent, and if you name the continent, you get a bonus for that continent. If somebody else starts it, they don't get the bonus. But if you do,
yeah,
like
that's awesome.
So this would be really good for like a weekly group to play.
Yeah, you want to go out and purchase
it. Ideally, you want the same group to play it over and over again.
Let's buy a name-redacted fucking Risk Legacy board and start playing it.
That should fucking happen. You
and, like, we'll fucking just keep everybody updated week to week on what's going on.
We should do that.
Do it as a news report?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to start every podcast like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is
fun.
I'll talk to Shadow about ordering a copy because he can just get them at cost instead of having to pay retail price.
Yeah, because I don't want to pay retail for anything ever.
I didn't pay retail all of 2009.
You didn't even pay cost.
I didn't pay cost either.
All right, what time? 27. Let's see if we can go for a few more minutes.
Oh, man, that's so good.
I need to come out more Fridays because...
I used to come out a lot.
But.
Ever since I got a job, I haven't been able to go, even though I've got money to spend now.
It's really good, too, because, like, I'm the kind of guy... I really enjoy learning a new game that nobody knows. But it's real nice when you can just sit down and play a game and not have to dissect a manual and reread verbiage. And
that first time I saw you at Geekspur, I was like, that dude looks like Colin. Wait, that is
Colin.
Because at the time, I hadn't seen you in, like,
three years,
probably. Well, no, I stopped by your work. I went to a concert in Winston and came by your work one time. But aside from that one instance, it had been like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. And he was like, I didn't know you like board games. I was like, I didn't know either. It's only like a week ago.
Have we told the story about Jeff's epic fail?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, well, we were playing Letters to Whitechapel.
Whitechapel was so good.
Woo! We had him. He was Jack. We had him.
That was the first time I was ever Jack. And I was trying to teach everybody the game.
Impossible for him to be anywhere else on the board except for the exact spot we said.
Right.
Turns out he was a move ahead of where he said he was.
Because he didn't write things down right?
Yeah.
I skipped like one turn. Yeah, it's...
I hate... One thing that bothers me about that is like... Well, I mean, I guess it's not really a flaw of the game. It just happens in the game. Like, if you do know exactly where he is and you just don't have the turns to get to him... Like,
yeah, that sucks.
No, but this it was like, we're right next to him. We know he's in this spot. Like, we...
Arrest 138.
Yeah. It was one of those things where it was like, okay, this one turn has taken as long as this entire game has, because we're just recounting every single turn.
So, there's another game that's it's similar to Whitechapel called Scotland Yard, and it's actually, like, an older Milton Bradley game. And
I've heard of that.
I was like, when I played it, I'm like, Whitechapel's going to be better, obviously. If Scotland Yard was better, they wouldn't have made Whitechapel, because Scotland Yard is older. I played Scotland Yard. I like that better than Whitechapel.
Wow. There's also a game loop in Whitechapel where you can win every time as Jack.
As Jack?
Yeah, it's like something where it's like, oh, you kill, you move one space, you move back. It has something to do with the requirements.
I figured that out one
distance.
Game, and I'm like, why don't I just do that? And then Shadow was like, because you ruin the game for everybody. Nobody's going to have fun playing if you just fucking win.
You glitched, okay? Like,
it's an apparent game loop.
Game.
Don't exploit it. Not one of those games that is designed just to be won. It's designed to have fucking fun with your friends. Like, don't just break the game.
Yeah, no, the best part of being Jack is just fucking with people.
Yeah.
Taking way too many turns.
And they're like, oh my god, I thought he was there, but nope.
The thing I like about Scotland Yard is it comes with a hat that says Mr. X. You can wear a hat and look down.
That's awesome.
What were you saying? Sorry.
The idea I like about Letters to Whitechapel is you, like, rounds, like, Knights 2 and 3, shit, you get really
Whitechapel, for everybody who doesn't know, is it's similar to what a common person would know as like a battleship type game.
It's,
where,
it's called a hidden movement game.
Yeah. So one person's Jack the Ripper, and they have to commit murders and get home.
We played the bare bones version. We didn't include any of the letters.
We only played
like
one
that.
Night.
Yeah, I've never, the letters are dumb. I've never played that.
But,
I've never played bare bones.
But like, the second and third
round.
But
so all the other players
are
trying to work together to find Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, and it
consists of a map of Whitechapel with numbers. There's circled numbers, and then in between those numbers, there are squares. Jack can only go on those numbers, and the police can only go on the squares. And yeah, the goal is to surround Jack.
So Jack's movement speed is much higher, but you also have five people that are police.
Yeah. It's intense, man.
I've always wanted to play a 1v1 game.
Oh God,
it almost already is a 1v1 because there's always
the
one of the police that's saying, you should go here, you should go here. There's always one person. That's the problem with cooperative games in general, like Pandemic and Forbidden Island.
Pandemic, you always get a fucking general.
There's,
like, you always
there's always a guy
you
that's like, you should
I like
do this,
the power
you should
struggle
do this, you should do this, and then we win.
I can't see, there's some people I can't play those games with because, because of their nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know.
But, like, when it's me and you sitting down playing the game, it's like, we both have a pretty good grasp on this.
Dude, you and I could do, you
I may
do
take
a two-player game of Pandemic easily.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. So.
Have you played Forbidden Island yet?
No,
I don't
Forbidden
know
Island
is
basically Pandemic, but much better. You're on a sinking island instead of trying to cure things, and it's...
Isn't there a Forbidden Desert?
There's Forbidden Desert, which I like Forbidden Desert, but I still think Forbidden Island is better. There's too much stuff going on in Forbidden Desert.
Okay. I also want to play the Temple Escape game, just because it sounds like kitschy.
Just called Escape.
Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
So since you're not necessarily a fan of Munchkin, what would your introductory tabletop game be?
As far as party games or like
just like games? So somebody's like, hey, I really like playing board games, but like Monopoly bores the shit out of me. What should I play?
There are questions that I would ask them beforehand, like how many players are playing, what are you familiar with.
Okay, so here, I'll tell you what.
A few games that I would throw out are Ingenious and Blokus. Those are really good, simple four-player games that anybody can pick up on. If they want something a little bit more advanced than that, I go for Ticket to Ride, because Ticket to Ride is in my top five.
It's a great game,
but there's a lot of depth to it. Like, it's one of the competitions at the championship, too.
I played on my mom's iPad a lot.
And the iPad version is fun. There's a game called Hey, That's My Fish, which sounds utterly stupid, but it's ridiculously fun, too. Like, you're some penguins on an ice cap that's sinking, and you have to collect fish. But
that sounds really cute.
The way that you play it, it is. The way that you play it is really interesting, because you go in a straight line, like Tron Light Cycles, and you pick up the tile that you were on before. So you're trying to break off a piece of ice cap for yourself so you can hog it up. And there's lots of strategy in it. As far as party games, I hate apples to apples, but if you like apples to apples, I would say Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, that's a great game.
But even more so than that, Telestrations is my new favorite party
game. There's another game I heard about that there's a Kickstarter for it right now, and it's basically, the description the guy gave of it was, Cards Against Humanity is to apples to apples, as this game is called Terrible People, or Terrible Things, is to Cranium.
I think I've heard of that.
I'm just wary of games on board games on Kickstarters, because I'm pretty active on the board gaming.
Pixel Lincoln was a Kickstarter, that's pretty good.
But no, I'm just saying, because a lot of people have been screwed. Their pledges, like, they
but
pledge.
But there are a lot of good Kickstarter games.
There really are. The
Alien Frontier started out as a Kickstarter, and that game's awesome.
Yes.
I want to check out, what was the game you were saying, Tessellations?
Telestrations.
Telestrations.
So it's like telephone and Pictionary all in one. It's best at like 6 to 8 people. There's actually a new version that fits 12. But anyway, so everyone starts out with a marker pad, and you roll a dice, and you have a card, and you pick random words. And let's say you get like fucking banana phone, whatever. So you
now I've got the song in my head. God damn it!
The word is banana phone. So then you draw a picture of what the banana phone is, and you pass it to your left. They look at your picture, try to guess what it is, and they pass it, and they try to draw what you would guess. And once it gets back to you, you show everybody the evolution from banana phone to cheeseburger. Like, how the fuck does that happen?
I played a version of that, but
the
that sounds...
The best thing is to play it with a 6-year-old.
Oh, wow.
It's great. I played it with some of the artists from Free Comic Book Day, and everyone's saying, well, you don't want to play it with people that can draw, because then your thing is going to look exactly the same. But no, Jacob should... No, no, it was Smitty. Smitty just turned everything into a penis. It was draw a penis.
I think we should do a round table with them pre-Free Comic Book Day, so they're not burnt out.
Yeah.
At the end. Like, because I know
game, there's a game I picked up at Starbucks one time, and it is glaringly broken, but if you're playing with people who respect the game, it's a lot of fun. And you have brackets. And it's basically a sports bracket, but all of the different things are like, what are some of the things? It'll be like,
Did I play this?
Yeah, absolutely. There's different categories, so like one might be people, one might be things. But so things might be toaster oven, and the other one might be trash can.
Mm-hmm.
And then you draw a question, and then everybody has to debate on which one of those things would win the terms of the question.
Right.
So if it's toaster oven and trash can, it might say, which one would make a better toilet? And so then you have to play with an odd number of people. And then as soon as everybody's kind of finalized their answer, it's a majority rule, and that moves on to the next bracket.
Oh, we got to play this.
It's so much fun. We played a couple times with the board, and we played a couple times where we just write down stupid things and questions.
Oh, this is the, we played this with Kelsey and Joelle.
Yeah, it's real fun. You have to play with the right people, because like I said, it can't just turn into like, well, fuck you, man. Obviously, a toaster oven's a better toilet. You know, but like, it's so much fun.
Right.
I think we're going to wrap it up here. We're right at like 37 minutes, so that sounds good. We've got a good 2 hours of content tonight. Once again, signing off from Name Redacted, Colin Norris.
Chris Nielsen.
Jeff. Shaman.
And I'm you. Go out and touch some butts, guys. Good night.